I'd like to call to order the March 14, 2013 session of the House Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources. We are in session. Good morning to everyone. We have a very prompt audience. Welcome to you all. We have several bills that we're going to hear. We also have a work session after our public hearings. The first bill up this morning is House Bill 2259. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2259. Beth, would you please tell us what that bill's about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2259 would increase certain fees charged by the Water Resources Department. There is in your packet also a Dash 1 amendment, which is quite lengthy. The Dash 1 amendment would add a sunset on the fee increases and also an annual adjustment for cost of living of 3%. There are fiscal statements in your packet as well and no revenue impact.
Thank you very much. And if it makes any difference to anyone, it is not my intention to be holding a work session on this bill today. So if any of you are here for that purpose, it's probably going to happen another day. With that, I'd like to call up the department, please. Phil and Brenda.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. For the record,
good morning.
Thank you, sir. For the record, Phil Ward, Director of the Oregon Water Resources Department, with me is Brenda Bateman from our senior staff. And we're here to talk with you today about House Bill 2259, which, as your committee administrator just articulated, removes a sunset from department fees that were established in 2009, plus adjusts those fees to reflect increased cost of doing business. This bill contains a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So ultimately, if and when you all move this bill out, that's its next stop. People, this bill is really about what we call our transactions program in the Water Resources Department. So people come to our department to do business all the time in relation to water right transactions. They come to apply to get a new surface or groundwater right. They come to change a water right, transfer it from one piece of property to another or from one type of use to another. They come to request an extension to prove up on a water right, or they come to ask us to certificate a water right after they've done all the things that need to be done to ultimately prove up on a water right. These things and many more relate to the fees that you see reflected in this bill. Processing transactions is a major job in our department. People need this function. Businesses, people, farmers, others need this function to run their businesses around the state. They need the water access that these transactions provide. There are about 32 FTE total in this piece of our program, about half of which are supported by fees. Total budget of around $4.2 million, $2.1 million in fees in our current budget. It's a complex and time-consuming job. So these are not the kind of things where you come in, bring an application in, people check to see if the application's complete, sign off, and it goes out the door. A water right transaction of this nature is, all of these are complex scientific processes. Let me just give a quick example. When someone comes in to transfer a water right from one property to another, they apply with the department. We have to do a detailed analysis of whether that transfer will injure another water right holder. It's a high standard, and we have to have competent scientific analysis as a part of it. And many, many of our final decisions along these lines are challenged. So we have to make sure that we do a very solid job as we are processing these things. Statutorily driven timelines, detailed scientific analysis in this process. If 2259 does not move forward, the fee levels roll back to those which currently exist permanently in statute, and those were set in 2003. What that means is that we will lose funding that supports approximately eight processing staff, so we would ultimately have to reduce our staff by 8 people. And the backlogs then that we've worked so hard to reduce in this program would increase dramatically. Our department once did face significant backlogs. And I think you have in front of you this morning a piece of paper that looks like that. This is our brag sheet on the work we've done to reduce backlogs in this agency, which were once extremely troubling. We had multi-year waiting periods, and we've taken a real focused effort to drive these things down. We've done both informal and formal efforts with both internal staff and external stakeholders to see how we could improve our processes to streamline how we do things, and it's had great success. You can see from that sheet of paper, the middle graph relates to water right certificates. And in 2003, we had over 6,000 pending water right certificates in the agency that needed to be processed. That, Mr. Chair and members, represented close to a decade-long backlog. That's unacceptable. It was unacceptable to us as managers and certainly unacceptable to our customers. You can see the work that's happened since then to drive those backlogs down. The same situation with water right transfers. We were over 700, and we're now down to around 200 in our backlog. We're not where we want to be yet, but we've made strong progress with the resources that both the general fund and fees have provided. Mr. Chair and members, it might be good to talk a little bit about how resources are split supporting this program. So under the fee levels that were set in 2009, the design was for 50% of the cost of processing these applications to be covered by the general fund, because there's indeed a general public interest in how we process and manage the water resource, how we process these kind of applications, 50% be covered by fees. The historic ratio was actually 70% covered by general fund and 30% by fees. So 2009 did represent a significant adjustment and shift in how that worked. House Bill 2259 retains the 50-50 split that was part of what was adopted in 2009. So again, in summary, just a couple more things from me, and then we'll be happy to respond to any questions. And I think Brenda would be happy to talk a little bit specifically about the bill, but a couple more things from me. House Bill 2259 retains the department's current transaction program at its current staffing level. There are no new FTE associated with this legislation. It does include an increased cost of business adjustment. And essentially, that the increases that you see in the fees from 2009 to now represent that. We were given a figure of about 13% from the Department of Administrative Services. If you average out all those fees on there, it comes up to about 12.5% in terms of what the adjustment would be. But that covers several things. So it's not a number the department picked out of the air. That cost of living adjustment covers a 5.5% reinstatement of the 2011 legislative across-the-board reductions. It covers the restoration of the furloughs that the state has taken in the last couple biennia. It covers a modest step increase adjustment, and it covers PERS rate increases. So essentially, those four things are what are in that cost of living adjustment that you see reflected in those fee levels. So, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd say in conclusion that this piece of legislation is critical to maintaining adequate service levels and avoiding new levels of backlog in the department. And for that reason, the department would ask your favorable consideration of this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Bateman with the Water Resources Department, and I wanted to walk through just very lightly the bill itself. It's a little bit complicated, and the reason is because there is a sunset that's applied to the fee schedule, and I'm always reminded when I look at a bill that has a sunset that we cannot simply put a date at the end of the bill and say this all goes away at a certain date and time, but you also have to include all of the language that will come into force on that date. And so because of that, the bill has a couple of sections that are twinned with each other. And I would ask that you draw your attention to or maybe even note down the sections that we're most interested in, that is our fee schedule as it occurs today and the proposed fee that we would propose to this body. There have been also sections that that we're worried about when this bill would be heard and worked. And if that were to happen after July 1st of this year, the current fee schedule would sunset. All of the numbers would revert back to previous levels, and we'd be working off of those. And so those sections are also in the bill. But this being prior to July 1st, we have specific sections that we'd like to draw your attention to that are more relevant to us in our work today. And those are sections 1, 3, 6, 8, 9, and 11. Those are the sections that show the fee schedule as it is today and the proposed number, proposed fee level the department would have you consider.
Mr. Chair, the other thing I'd just add is that there are two categories of outlier fees that don't fit what we talked about earlier. And there were a couple fees in there, one specifically the fees for water right adjudications that had not been increased since 1983. The fee increases there reflect larger than the amounts that we discussed earlier significantly. But that's simply a matter of the fact that these increases had not, or these, that particular fee had not been increased since 1983.
Very good. Thank you very much. Questions or comments for our panel members? Representative Krieger, please.
I don't know where to start. You were in my office the other day and we talked about what would happen if you, instead of having this divert back to 2003, we simply passed a bill that gave us the present level. And I think my understanding was that you said it would require you to lose two employees and about $300,000, and I do see the fee increase as $1 million would come in. I also recognize that during the 2003 you had an increase and you got rid of some of your backlog, and that continued with the 2009 backlog. You were able with the fee increase that you had in those 2 years and the same number of employees, so I would assume you would be able to continue to work on backlog with the given amount of fees and the given amount of money at the same rate you had before, unless there were some other, there's PERS issues and things like that, I understand. But I'm looking at all that, and then I see this 3% in here with a legislative body really loses any oversight over the department at all, and I could not go along with an automatic 3% increase, I can tell you that now. We want to have you come in here and justify those positions, show us the work that you're doing, and there may be a need for more than 3%. I don't know. But that's just kind of a comment that I have, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much, Representative Krieger. Appreciate your concerns, and I think that those are some that may be generally shared, and I think that would be a good information. Excuse me. I'm going to recognize Vice Chair Esquivel and Representative Whitson on deck.
I believe that we discussed in my office about a factor, instead of doing this every 4 years or whatever, to factor this into the CPI index, correct? But why did we outline a 3%?
Mr. Chair, Representative, perhaps, Brenda, you'd be best able to answer that.
And I'll tell you why, Mr. Chair. I don't want to do this every 4 years of where all of a sudden everyone takes the oxygen out of the air when you come in with a fee increase, because that's what's going on here. But your fee structure has not been that long.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, in talking to legal counsel about how best to structure this and how other agencies have put an adjustment factor into their language, the feeling was it would be better to peg it at a no greater than specific number than to have a floating a variable out there. And so that was the direction we went, but we're certainly able to look at it again.
Follow up.
Sure.
The list that we have in front of us, you gave us this matrix on the side, this scale of fees from 2009. I had requested that they had been taken to the bill and crossed off here and put in, insert these particular fees from 2009 versus, are these 2009 fees or are these 2003 fees?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the particular list that you have in front of you, Representative, is the list of fees that are current, and they were set in 2009. We're calling those our 2009 fees. And those are the ones that you do see in the bill in Sections 1, 3, and 6, as I mentioned earlier. Those are the sections that would change from today's fee levels, first set in 2009, to the proposed fee levels.
Representative Whitsitt.
Yes, thank you. We talked about this in my office, too. I was wondering if you could discuss House Bill 2101 from 2007 and discuss the fees that were raised in 2009 from 2007. Essentially, they were doubled, a number of them. And I was wondering if you could provide for us a graph that shows 2003, 2007, 2009, 2013, because we're looking at increases that often, and they've essentially, a number of these doubled from 2007 to 2009, and now we're asking for more. So I'm asking for you to do, if you could provide us with a graph that shows what your increases are for the respective things that you do over that time period.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we'll do that. And if I could just add briefly, the situation that happened in 2009, as you all know, the state was in a significant fiscal crisis. And historically, our fees had been, as I mentioned earlier, these particular fees had been 70% supported by general fund, 30% supported by these transaction programs had been supported 70% by general fund, 30% by fees paid by the applicants. In 2009, there was a policy decision made to adjust that to a 50-50 level. What that did was it resulted in, one time significantly, as the representative has identified, significant fee increases. Again, what we're hoping to do today is just maintain that 50-50 split that was adopted in 2009, but adjust that for the increased cost of doing business that we're seeing today. Again, we're seeing perhaps a more than usual increase in the cost of doing business because of the restoration of some of the cuts relative to employee compensation that occurred in these recent bienniums. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen.
Actually, Chair Witt, that answered my question.
All right. Thank you. Very good. Anything further on this side? Representative Reardon, please.
Just curious. Just running, trying to come up speed on a lot of these issues. Does this bill place any fees on domestic wells?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't believe this bill relates to domestic wells or start card fees, that kind of thing. None of those are here. So, no, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, what I will, if I may.
Please.
Thank you. It might be helpful for me. You mentioned some fees that were way back to 1983. Could you identify those for me in the bill? So, because some of these actually are quite eye-popping.
Yes.
And
yes.
It might be helpful to know what the history of those particular fees are.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, if you could draw your attention to Section 11, there's a fee schedule in there that is specific to adjudication, and those fees have not been raised since 1983, and so that's why you'll see a bit more significant jump there than in other areas. I will say, in relation to these as well, that we had met with stakeholders throughout the fall to look at our fee schedule and get their feedback as to whether these fees looked fair, equitable, and they did point out some that looked like a pretty high jump. This section was one of them, and we subsequently lowered a bit the original numbers that we'd had in there. So this is one section that has been worked a little bit. Okay, thank you.
Additional questions or comments?
Mr. Clerk.
Yes, please.
How many people are in this section that we're doing this stuff? How many did you say, two?
No, Mr. Chair, Representative, there are about 32 FTE supported in this entire program, both general fund and fee supported.
Just for logging in permits and you have 32 people?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's correct. And as we discussed a little earlier, these are this is much more than just an application coming in the door and somebody stamping it and saying, you get your water right permit.
I understand that. But
we have to
make people?
That.
32 people?
Okay. Anything further? Yes, Representative Reardon.
These fees help pay for the water masters?
Mr. Chair, Representative, these fees do not support the water masters. The water master court is pretty much all supported by general fund.
All right. Thank you very much. Sure. Appreciate that.
Thank you, members.
Absolutely. Next, I'm going to call up, please, April Snell and Elizabeth Renwick. Of you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Witt. For the record, April Snell, Executive Director with the Oregon Water Resources Congress, and I'm here in support of House Bill 2259. You should already have copies of a letter that we signed on to along with several other organizations. The date is back in February, as that is when this bill was originally scheduled, so we did not change the date since that had already been submitted into the record. Our association represents irrigation districts and other agricultural water suppliers. And so some of you may be wondering, why are we up here supporting a fee bill? Well, this is an existing set of fees that provides essential services to our constituents. And while fees are never a fun topic, in this case, this is a very necessary bill. These fees are, as was explained by the Water Resources Department, there are some changes from the 2009 levels, but by and large, they represent a very difficultly negotiated agreement that 50% of the fees would be paid by the water users who directly benefit, and the other 50% would be paid for out of the general fund to ensure that the department can protect those water resources on behalf of the entire public. If the fees were to revert back to the 2003 levels, that would be catastrophic to the department. They would lose, I think, roughly seven to nine positions. I'm not sure what the exact number is, but that would cause a significant delay in the transactions that our water users depend upon, and that could have impacts in every area of the state, both to agriculture, municipal, environmental. There's a lot of transactions that are involved, and some of them are highly complex, and that's why the bill you have is complex, because there's a lot of different fees out there. And so for our members, this is an important bill because we want to make sure that the department is able to continue providing its core services to all the water users in the state, and these fees help do that. So with that, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Chair Witt and members of the committee, I'm Elizabeth Remley, here representing the Oregon Association of Nurseries. The Nursery Association is the largest in the agriculture industry in Oregon, and the Nursery Association represents the Christmas tree industry, nurseries, and greenhouses. We're here supporting House Bill 2259 along with the Water Resources of Congress and the other folks in that letter. We've spent a lot of time talking about this. This fees are never fun. No one likes paying them, but in this case, these fees help our members and other folks who use water to make sure that the transactions happen in a timely manner so that we don't have to spend a whole bunch of time worrying about that and we can actually do our business as farmers. So with that, I will take any questions.
All right, thank you. Questions or comments for this panel? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, Roger Beyer, Jerry Schmidt, and Greg Capillas. Morning, Roger.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer here representing the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. Oregon Dairy Farmers Association is opposed to House Bill 2259, and I assume we're now talking about 2259, the -1 amendments.
Please feel free to discuss those.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. For anyone who knows much about or has heard much about the dairy industry for the past 4 or 5 years, you would know that the dairy industry economics have not been good, and we were opposed to the fee increases in 2009 when those were instituted. The Dairy Farmers was not part of the work group or part of the agreed group that agreed to the 50-50 split. But the economics in the dairy industry have been very difficult at best and almost bankrupting at the worst. In fact, many of our dairy farms have gone out of business in the last 4 years due to the economics. And quite frankly, any fee increases above where they are today is just unacceptable for them at this time. If this bill simply extended the sunset to at the 2009 level, we would begrudgingly be neutral on that and not step forward. But we just can't agree with a 13% increase at this point in time. These folks are operating on levels where they are losing money every day on every cow they milk, and they've been doing that for multiple years on end now. So this bill will certainly hurt them. In addition, when we get to the -1 amendments, the automatic 3% increase per year is, again, completely unacceptable. We understand costs increase, but in the dairy world, costs continue to increase, but their revenue does not. And therefore, because of those reasons, it's just we can't support it at this point in time. Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Schmidt. I'm here today representing the Oregon Groundwater Association. With me is Greg Capillas, who is current president of the Oregon Groundwater Association. Greg has also been chair of the Oregon Groundwater Advisory Committee with the Water Resources Department. His firm, Pacific Hydrogeology, he'll get into some specifics about the bill, but they do a lot of work with the consumers directly because he interacts with the department almost on a daily basis. So I want to give some broad general overall statements. I'd echo what Roger just said. We've been opposed to the fee increases all the way along. With my testimony that I gave you, there's a graph, and I always love graphs because I'm a visual person and I like to see numbers on the graph. You can see what our industry has been facing. I was going to submit some other graphs, which is graphs of the geotech holes and graphs of monitoring well reports. They're all similar in the fact that they all are declining. And in addition, I've had occasion to talk to the department, and as is with transfers. So across the board, we're seeing a decline. And if you look at the graph, and we're seeing a decline, and yet on the top, I just penciled in some numbers about what the department has been having for FTEs. It kind of shows you where we are as an organization saying we're getting crippled here. We're having to close businesses, and yet the department levels are staying stagnant, if not increasing. And of course, this time they're asking for 159 FTEs, which is a significant increase over past years. And our question that our members had to the department was, if everything is declining, why are we asking for more people? And that's our simple analysis. When I gave my testimony, I wanted to give you some background of the association. We've been involved with the department for many, many years. We sponsored a bill back in 1989 to create a Start Card Fund. This fund was designated and dedicated to a specific purpose, and that was inspecting wells for everyone that's drilling a well, that the wells would be inspected. This started out with a $75 fee. By 1993, this fee had risen to well over $1 million in their fund. So at that point, we approached the department and the legislature with House Bill 3456, and what we said is, can't we do some upgrading of the department? Up until this time, if you had a well report, it was filed by a paper well report in the department. So the only way to see those things would to go to the department itself and pull the copy of the well off. With the help of the Oregon Association of Realtors, we were successful in establishing that fund, a one-time transfer to digitalize all those records, and so that people have access, general public and realtors and everybody else. And that has been hugely successful. Frankly, it has lowered the workload for the department. It's helped the general public. So we are a vast supporter of the department in getting data to the public and to our people. But for reasons mentioned by Roger, we just can't support an increase at this time. It's just out of the question at this point from our membership point of view. And with that, I'll let Greg get into some of the specifics.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Greg Capillas. My wife and I operate our own business out of Molino. We do primarily... We're hydrogeologists, but we end up doing primarily water rights consulting. It's probably about 80% of what we do. So I'm here representing, our clients, who are primarily small farmers, vineyards, and nurseries. And then I'm also representing the Oregon Groundwater Association, and because they, these are people in the industry that are affected by the trickle-down effects of reduction in water right activity by my clients. So I kind of want to talk a little bit about sort of the impacts. We are opposed to these fee increases, and there's a number of reasons for that. House Bill 2259, it's been introduced to reportedly address a 13% cost increase to the Water Resources Department. These fee increases come on the heels of a very large fee increase in 2009 that was established through Senate Bill 788, and that's the one that's scheduled to sunset this year. Now, Senate Bill 788 introduced 38 fee increases, ranging from 25% to 300%, averaging 78%. And these are just numbers I got from just going through the bill and, kind of comparing the previous fees to the current fees. Senate Bill 788 also included 16 new fees, ranging from $100 to $630. House Bill 2259 adds to this with 47 fee increases, ranging from 11% to 43%, averaging 17%. Just to kind of give you an idea of what we're looking at, there's a couple of reasons primarily why we are opposed to these fee increases. These fee increases really hurt the small businesses that are affected by them. We're talking about small farmers, nurseries, vineyards. They generally don't have a lot of control over the cost of their product or the prices for their product. And so, when they're getting hit by increasing costs of operation, they have to absorb those. They just have to absorb them somehow and try to adjust. There's another reason why I'm concerned that these fee increases maybe aren't really going to deliver to the Water Resources Department what they're hoping. After the large fee increases in 2009, we observed a lot of drop-off in our work, as water rights consultants. And we also heard from Water Resources staff that they were getting fewer applications in, and that resulted in a decrease in fees collected and a drop in staff demand. I think that maybe contributed to the department being able to get a little bit more caught up on their backlog because they had fewer new applications coming in. The information provided by the Water Resources Department during a stakeholders meeting, they talked about how, their budgets for the 2009-2011 and the 2011 and 2013 biennia projected a 50-50 split of fees versus general fund. Actual split in 2009-2011 was 44-56, and so far in 2011 to 2013, 42-58. So I'm concerned that, we may have reached a point of diminishing returns, and that further fee increases are going to discourage people, water right holders, from being proactively managing their water rights and, doing the things that they should be doing, and they may be putting those things off because of the increased fees. And I'm afraid that may result in even fewer applications coming into the department. Now, the economy is starting to pick up, but, I think we've got a long ways to go. We all support a well-funded, fully functional Water Resources Department. And I think it's obvious that effective management of our water resources is vital to our economy. But the waters of the state belong to the public. Everybody benefits from proper management of the resource, and we are really all water users in one way or another. I think, there's a lot of arguments that could be made that we need to fund the Water Resources Department with a greater share of general funds instead of putting ever-increasing burdens on a single class of users. Now, having said all that, we also recognize that the Water Resources Department has made improvements in catching up on their backlogs, and we don't think that going back to the fees prior to 2009 would be a good idea. I think that would be too damaging to the department. So we would be in favor of lifting the sunset, but not increasing the fees. And there may be one exception to that, and that would be there is one fee that I think was left off as an oversight in Senate Bill 788. It's a fee for processing claims of beneficial use for water right transfers. I think it would make sense to go ahead and include that. But other than that, we are opposed to any of the fee increases. Thank you, and I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you very, very much. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Unger.
Chair Brett, thank you. Thanks for your testimony. This the statement that caught my attention was that that despite what the goal of the Water Resources Department is, that the actual split for fees and general fund is 44-56 and 42-58. I'm just reading out of your testimony here. Do you have further documentation besides what you say here, which is that a stakeholders meeting?
That was based on some sexual paper documents that I received at the stakeholder meeting.
Could follow up? Could you provide those to the committee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Unger, I'd be happy to.
Great. And that, Chair, if it would be okay, I think it might be, that seems like a pretty big problem if that's the case. And it would be great if we could get the Water Resources Department staff to come up and maybe respond to that particular issue in specific, if you don't mind.
Okay, that will be fine. Any additional questions or comments? Representative Reardon?
I'd like to understand, you've talked a lot about the impact on the business, and it is a great concern. Do you have any idea the actual percentage of your expenses that for typical business would be charged to fees or be caused by fees. If you look at labor, transportation, all these other fees, any ideas at, you know, 1%, 10%, any feel?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reardon, no, I'm afraid I can't come up with that. I mean, I think that would be a great question to ask somebody who's in farming. You know, I mean, I'm sure that it's a small percentage, but you know, what I hear from a lot of my clients is that they're just, you know, constantly getting hit by new costs, new fees coming from all sides, and they're just, you know, finding it harder and harder to, you know, to make money in the business. Right.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reardon, from the dairy farmers, I can't give you exact numbers, but I can give you approximations that feed is the biggest cost for a dairy farmer, and while the feed costs over the last two biennia, 4 or 5 years, have been rising exponentially with the cost of grain, particularly cost of grain, cost of fuel, because most of the dairy farmers are going to have to truck their feed in from someplace else. Their second largest cost is labor, then utilities, specifically electricity. The fees they pay, I can't give you an exact percentage of what that is of their bottom line, but I can tell you that from their perspective, they just can't afford any more. I wish I had some exact numbers, and it depends dairy farm by dairy farm, because obviously in this bill, you only pay most of these fees if you request a service. But many dairy farmers are trying to move water from one field to another, or things like that on any given year. With the exception of that, there is embedded in here the new fee that was instituted last in 2009, which is the reservoir or the dam fee. The good news I can tell you is via agreement with the Water Resources Department, Department of Ag, and the dairy farmers, after that was started, originally that fee was imposed on all lagoons, manure lagoons, that via an agreement between Water Resources Department of Ag and dairy farmers, the manure lagoons were exempted from that fee because those were decided that the first and foremost, the Water Resources people did not inspect those. Department of Ag people inspected those twice a year, every year, and the dairy farmers already paid a fee, the CAFO fee, for the purpose of that. So the good news is those were exempted, and we appreciated that very much, the Water Resources Department being willing to work with us and exempt those, because the dairy farmers were not getting that service, but yet they were expected to pay that fee.
Thank you.
Representative Krieger.
Yeah, just a short one. You kind of touched on it, but I'll make sure you have the opportunity to make people understand that in multiple years, you may have not just a fee. A dairy farmer may have multiple reasons to have different type of fees charged and to do his operation. Can you elaborate a little bit?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Krieger. Yeah, yes, you are right. Any time under these fees that you apply for a service, you're obviously paying a fee. So if you have multiple operations, multiple water rights, you want to move water in different places, you want to establish a new well, you want to upgrade something, there are many times, almost all farmers would do multiple things throughout the year. So this isn't just one of these fees for a dairy farmer. It is multiple fees. And thank you for that question, but absolutely.
Representative Woods.
My question is, or comment is a follow-up, and perhaps you can talk about this. What are you constrained by in a dairy operation? For example, Clean Water Act, EPA, ODEQ fees, Department of Ag fees. Could you just give us kind of an idea of what a typical ag business is looking at regarding regulations and fees right now, outside of doing their job?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Whitsitt. I, having never been worked on a dairy farm or really owned a dairy farm myself, I don't know that I can do justice to that question. But I can tell you that, from the Department of Ag, dairy farmers have to pay an annual CAFO fee, and they have to have a food safety license. Those are both annual fees from the Department of Ag. I'm not aware of any fees from DEQ.
We've been talking about the water right fees. I'm not aware of any at the federal level at this point in time. So I guess the best thing I could do is get back to you and get you a list, and I'd be happy to provide that for the committee.
Roger, if you'd provide that for the whole committee, too, I think that would
be helpful.
And follow-up, it's really more a point of regulation. My point is they are severely regulated, not just dairy farms, but regular farms, the groundwater industry, the everything right now related to agriculture and natural resources, forestry, et cetera. We're just regulated almost to death. So that's my point.
Thank you. Very good. Additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Gentlemen, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate the issues that you've surfaced. Before I lose track of Representative Unger's question, I'm going to ask the department to come back up, please. And Representative Unger, if you'd please, for the record, restate your question.
Thank you, Chair. Director Ward, my question was, in a previous testimony that there was reference to the goal of the 50-50 split general fund fee fund was out of whack, and in fact the fee income was actually paying for more than 50% of the cost of the of processing, and I was hoping that you could respond to that particular statistic.
Mr. Chair, Representative, happy to do so. And it is true. And when you establish a goal at any time, it's that, and then you're faced with reality. But the reality of the situation has been that the fee revenue has not held up its end. So, for example, in this last year, the general fund covered about 60% of this program. The fee revenue only supported about 40%. And indeed, we had to lay off several fee-supported positions due to the downturn in the economy because the fee revenues were not there to support it. So through the history of this program, what we've seen is that actually the fee revenues, and I attribute it to the economy, the economic situation we faced in recent years, have not held up their end, and so the general fund has actually carried more of the burden. We've ended up having to reduce staff to have the resources to function.
Chair, if I could just follow up, it might be easier for the director. I maybe unfairly asked the previous testifier to supply us with information, but it might be easier for the director just to provide us with how well we've been doing meeting our goals on that split. And if you'd be willing to do that, it'd be really appreciated, and that will let Gregory off the hook.
We'll do that in writing, Mr. Chair. Representative, just for your note, the quick numbers I have here in front of me, as of January 2013 for the previous year, was a 60-40 split general fund to fee, and the previous year, June 2012, the numbers I have, 56% general fund, 44% fees. So consistently, we found the fee revenues not holding up their end.
Thank you very much, Representative Unger. Let's see. With that, I would like to call up, Robert Stumbo and Bill Cluding and Jim Welch.
Chairman Witt, I'm Bob Stumbo. I choose not to testify.
Okay, very good. Thank you, sir. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Chair Witt. Jim Welch here for the Oregon Cattlemen Association. The Oregon Cattlemen Association is not in favor of increasing the 2009 fees within this legislation, House Bill 2259, at this point in time. We have participated in the last several years, and even before that, and really appreciate the department and the commission's invitations for the stakeholders to have this communication, ongoing communication. And there's been numerous times that we've been called to sit with them and go over their budget. And recently, this last year, they had the stakeholder groups talking about revenues that they felt they would need. And we were very concerned at that point in time, of course, because we were not supportive of the 50-50 split here between the general fund dollars and fees. We saw the fees increasing and some efforts to see that that would happen. Even the commission, we felt in their comments, were looking to continue this beyond maybe the 50-50 split. And it really concerned us. I know that they have not made a public statement that's what they want to do, but I tell you, when you look at this, when you look at the bills we have before us this session, this particular bill, then you look at Senate Bill 217, which is a legislation for increasing or applying a $100 per management fee water right for water rights. And then you look at including these two bills, there's several other bills out there that are increasing fees. And not to mention, and I'm not blaming the department for this, but there's another bill that would create a new fee for exempt wells. And then you take a look at, and we participated all the way through the development of the IWRS, Integrated Water Resources Strategy process, since 2009. And you look at the governor's budget, and the governor has applied some funding for not only water resources under IWRS implementation, but for DEQ, ODF&W, and ODA. And so you see a lot of increases. That was general fund budget increases, not fee increase. Excuse me, I think I said fee increase. That was general fund budget increase. So you see the department is receiving for programs and for the things that they're talking about, support from the governor's office and some other organizations, fee increases and general fund. We would like to see the general fund maintained closer to 70%, supporting the mission of the Water Resources Department, and we'd like to see the fee base be around 30%, not over 40%. We'd like to see that turn back, if we could do that. And I know that they're asking for fee base to support some things, but if the economy hasn't improved to a level and we're not using some of those fees or some of the transactions within the department, then they shouldn't need those dollars either. You know, and so we have to be concerned about, you know, those statements. We were very concerned about their approach this legislative session, and we talked about that with the commission and with them, and mentioned several times if they could not, and I think they've done a fairly decent job of talking about their budget and what their fees support and what they need and everything, but I think there's some more things that need to be explained here in their approach this session, because it's complicating their message, we believe, and it's confusing, I think, legislators and organizations out there that really need, you know, to be supported by their mission. And Mr. Chair, I think that those are our concerns, and we want to be helpful in this process, and we have certainly appreciated their willingness to have stakeholders participate in all of this with them. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Bill.
Chair Witt, Vice Chair's Committee, for the record, Bill Twitting, a longtime member of Lucky Mute Domestic Water Co-op and a longtime board member. Let me fill you in on how our group got started. We're east of Buena Vista, south of Dallas, Monmouth. Our domestic co-op started out small back in the 50s because people couldn't find good well water. We've expanded 165 square mile area. 175 miles of mainline pipe in the ground. We have well over a million gallons of water storage in various tanks around the countryside. Just in the last few years, we're still paying on this for a long time, but we've had $1.5 million worth of upgrade. All this is paid for by the member fees, which the minimum fee is $40 per member. We have 1,040 members, three full-time dairies. Just a year and a half ago, we got asked a mandate from the state to chlorinate our system, which we did. Come to find out, we were one of the few that accomplished it on time. That was an $80,000 factor, plus almost $2,000 a month maintenance on this system. What I'm getting at, the way our system is set up, we wound up in what they call American bottom aquifer. If I may use this table as the example of the size of this thing, but somehow four of our wells wound up right here in the corner. And we only run two wells at a time because that maintains the tank levels throughout our district. But we knew we were in trouble because concentrated in this one corner, we kept getting pump problems. I won't mention the city, but they were granted to be able to put a test well in within a stone's throw from us. And when they put a test well in, that means they got to run so many gallons for 24 hours. But what happened halfway through this test, our two pumps that was running started sucking air. It filled up our whole system full of air. Luckily, there was no major damage, a lot of complaints. But we fully expected this. We cautioned them about this. But knowing we had a problem, years before we went to the landowners on the other end of this and started asking landowners for maybe a possible lease on putting in a well up here, fully intent to shut one of our wells down, cap it. It took a while, but we finally found a landowner, quite an expensive lease just to get the okay to put the test well in, have it surveyed. May 22, 2009, we applied with the state water district agency for a water transfer. Knowing full well we were going to shut one well down, cap it, and if this well worked out, we'd be okay. At least we could stay away from this area that was critical. The process started when we first started sitting down with the state 6-1-2011. And I'd already told our board, our members, that for sure, we know we're going to have to put a test well in. And I told our board, our members, I said, we're looking at $5,000 on top of already the expenses we went through. It's going to cost us $5,000 for this test well, but we have to do it. Well, we assumed immediately that, okay, our transfer was looked at. Go ahead and try your test well. And I don't know how this works in this department, but maybe I'll get a clearer picture when I'm done if you bear with me. First thing we got, we asked for 1 cubic foot, and we realized, well, that might be crowding it per second. So let's cut it back to a half. That's exactly what our lowest well in this area right here pulls. I might add, we have by these agreements with these wells, we're only pulling two-thirds. We never have approached the maximum limit of water that we could draw because we knew we better not. That's why we started putting on all these big storage tanks. We got told no. Shoot, now what? We contacted Representative Thompson, Senator Boquist. I want to thank Representative Thompson for setting up meetings after meetings and emails. And to shorten this up, in the early part of 2012, we finally had to hire a water attorney out of Portland. We let him handle the inside work. Well, by June of 2012, it cost our co-op $27,000. And we still got a no. Finally, the ice broke through, and we got the okay to put the test well in. And exactly $5,000 later, we run our test. The test run fine. And we're not still sure whether we're going to get the permit to put the main well in. But I guess the point I'm trying to make is maybe streamlining this procedure, maybe more efficiency in this department, taking a shortcut. It's not really a shortcut. These scattered wells that are out in that other area, I mean, they're all documented. They know where these wells are, how much they're pulling. But I can't see why it cost us $27,000 to get okay to put the test well in. Chair Whip, committee, and I'll stop right there and I'll answer questions. But maybe I'll get a clearer view how this system works. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bill. And it's evident that you are facing some frustrations. I will share with you that there are frustrations all the way around. That's part of the reason why I announced earlier that I was not going to do a work session today. I'm stumped, though. I'm not embarrassed to admit it. Just doing nothing is not sufficient. So we could leave the bill where it is and nothing happens, and I'm not sure that that's that we've done our job as a committee. I'm not exactly sure how, if we were to move closer, Jim, to more general fund support, how I get us there at this time. And so I'm stumped. And I'm open, guys, to suggestions, if you have any. And I don't mean to put you all on the spot, but some of our committees members may have some ideas as well. So if any of you witnesses have suggestions about how we can move a little closer together on this one, the chair's a willing listener here at this point. With that, Representative Krieger.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think we need to try to find a solution, and I think it needs to meet, as Chair, your position, your desires. I think there's some people that could help you get there.
Thank you. Thank you.
You need to get there.
Thank you both. Representative Whitson.
I wanted to thank Mr. Kluding very much. I appreciate your testimony, and this is a story that in the last 8 years, Senate District 28, that I worked as chief of staff for, I have heard dozens upon dozens upon dozens of times throughout Eastern Oregon where people apply for well permits. It's delayed. I mean, there is a problem in the department, in my opinion. I don't know what it is, but your story is not unique. But thank you for sharing it with us.
Chair Witt, Representative Witsit, you know, again, I do not know how these departments work. Yeah. And maybe this, maybe they have a rule book that says 1, 2, 3, 4. But to me, in times like this, the way the economy is, there should be a more efficient way. And the efficient way would be, after the transfer was put in 2009, that gave them time to do some thinking. But when we first applied for the test well, I think it has saved a lot of time from both of us. It says, okay, put the test well in, and we'll go over the facts, and we'll sit down with you, and then we'll go from there. But to get the no, 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 and then to have to go to Portland to hire an attorney, I think it was money that we could have saved on adding more new pipe, not more pipe, but replacing our older pipe, which we've been doing for the last 15 years. So I'll just stop right there. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate, as does Representative Witsit, you're bringing that to our attention. Bill, I want you to tell us a little bit more. I'm willing to meet with you afterwards, and we can work through this one too. But I'm going to need you guys' help and everybody else's help to get to the middle here somehow, some way, on this bill. And we're going to have a little discussion about that here after I hear, after we all hear the public testimony. And I'm very eager for Representative Krieger's wisdom on this matter. But I appreciate your testimony, appreciate everyone's testimony. And I just want everybody to understand, not all of this by any means, but there's a great deal of this. Our pie in this state shrunk. And the fact that we heard from the dairymen that they can't afford any increases. I have no doubt in my mind whatsoever that they can't afford any increases, like the cattlemen and like everybody else. But I also hear the jam that the department's in, and they can't afford not to have adequate resources. And I can't help but think if our economy was running stronger, we might not be having this debate. People could afford a little bigger piece. Our pie would grow together, and we'd solve a lot of issues. But we've got to, in the interim, while we're trying to grow this economy, and this committee is going to do its share to achieve that, but in the interim, we've got to find a solution. We're going to do that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call up, please, let's see here, Tom Quintel. So. Good morning.
Good morning, Representative Witt and members of the committee. I'm a small-scale miner. My name is Tom Quintel, and I've been doing it for about 30 years. I guess what I'd like to do, save a little time. I hate to read testimony, but there's a lot of issues that I'd like to cover, so if I read it, it'll go pretty fast.
Alright.
First off, House Bill 2259 increases and creates some new fees charged by the Water Resource Department for almost every water permit. This bill will cost more for citizens or businesses that has an issue with water rights. House Bill 2259 increases or adds new fees totaling, from what I can tell, about $16,921.50 over the old fees, mostly for applications and some appeal processes. It would be nice to know if Oregon Water Department of Water Resources believe the permit fee increases is needed for expected increases in their workload, and if not, that the fees are not justified in a depressed economy. And this isn't fair isn't feasibly physically responsible thing to do. House Bill 2259 doesn't add any new programs, but this kind of fee increase grows government. Increased fees will depress and affect local communities that have any water issues. Increased fees will depress industries needing water permits. I'll get into the one of the limited license. I read the bill, and it appears that on, I believe, page 6, section 2, line 1, that's the only place I can find where the limited license requirement is mentioned in this bill. As a small-scale miner, we have what we call out-of-stream, you call them high bankers, power sluices, whatever. And one of the things we've been going over with, I talked to Dwight French, I talked to Brenda a few years ago about the issue of why we even need their limited license, okay? You know, it was about $150 for being able to withdraw a little water to run a little washer box out of a stream. It was site-specific, and every time we moved that pump, it was $15. I don't care if it was 5 feet, 10 feet, that was the charge. Well, automatically, we see it went up to $250, and I try to figure, well, how did they do that? You know, when did they do that? Well, they use administrative rules, I guess, to do it. And so when I talked to Dwight the other day, I said, well, he said, well, if this bill passes, we probably would increase that fee somewhere around $300 or whatever. So we have no clue what they're going to do with that fee. And the reason I have an issue, and I think all miners in Oregon have an issue with this, is they don't seem to want to recognize the 1899 water grant. And, you know, it's I've stated it here as plainly as I can. This was granted for mining and hydropower, and we should be exempt from it. And they'll admit to me that, well, you know, we understand your problem. It's site-specific, and if you, let's say our association has 10 mining claims all over Oregon, it would cost each member $2,500 just to be able to run their little washer box out of the stream. It's crazy. It has no application for what we do. And I really would like, and if they'll work with us, it seems like they've just drawn a line in the sand, and that's it. You're going to have that limited license. We had one incident down on Calcrick here a year or two ago where some gentleman went down and said, where's your license to take water out of that stream? He says, I've got a 600 DEQ permit. I don't need a license. And they said, oh, yes, you do. And if you aren't out of the stream, I'll come back and confiscate your equipment. This is crazy. I mean, I can see if we're withdrawing, you know, large volumes of water, for Pete's sakes, out of a stream. But we're talking about a little washer box. We're not big mining. We're talking a little washer box. So this limited license thing that they are purporting that they have authority to enforce, somehow we need to work with that department to make them understand, get them out on a stream, and show them what we do. Because I really truly believe that when they're sitting behind their little cubicles, they come up with all these wonderful ideas to raise money, but it's totally, totally impossible for a miner to comply with it. So we don't. Frankly, we don't. And so that's my, I guess, one of my biggest issues. And getting back to fees, some of these fees are like $800 increases on different parts of the bill, which to me is just totally excessive. I realize they've got to have a working bureaucracy, but it seems like in our economy right now, just from what I've heard of different testimonies, that everybody is, you know, kind of hurting. And why do they increase so much? When I talked to Dwight, he said, well, we haven't had a fee increase since 2002 or thereabouts. Well, we sure got another one on our limited license. within a few years ago. So I don't, this is a problem I have with administrative rules. You know, it's good housekeeping for the legislature. You guys don't have to micromanage all the different agencies around the state. That's a housekeeping method they use, apparently, to raise fees without, a lot of times you don't even know if it's been raised. So anyway, bottom line, we need to get with this department and maybe wake them up a little bit so they'll work with us and see what our point is. I ask if we come up with a bill, would they support us to eliminate, exempt us from these limited licenses? And they said, well, maybe. So I think we need to do that. I really do. And so I appreciate and thank you for listening to my testimony. Appreciate it, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Tom, thank you very much. You talked about raising fees. You probably raised some other things here on the on this committee, not the least of which is blood pressure. You, the fact that that sometimes administrative rules don't necessarily reflect the will of the legislature is equally frustrating to many of us. So I want to assure you of that. I do believe that the folks over at the department are trying to do a good job, they're faced with a lot of challenges as well, just like you and a lot of your colleagues are. And I'd like to ask if you'd be willing to sit down with someone from the department to hash out some of the challenges that may be unnecessary or not, and let us know about that.
Okay.
You'd be willing to do that?
I sure will.
Director Ward, can you find somebody to sit down and work, go through some of these challenges? I appreciate that very much. Would the two of you, after the hearing, please get together and then I want to hear what the resolution is.
Okay, I sure appreciate it a lot.
Okay.
Need your help.
And when I hear about that resolution, it's going to be shared with the committee here as well.
Okay.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. with that, I'd like to call up, please, Jim Myron, Mark Landauer, and Gil Riddell, please. Hopefully everyone's still in the hearing room. I lost sight of Gil there for a minute.
Yeah, he's hard to lose sight of.
That's why I figured he'd left the room. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jim Myron. I'm here representing Water Watch of Oregon and the Native Fish Society. Both of my clients support this bill. You've heard about the consequences if this does not pass, and so I just wanted to put our organizations on record in support of the bill. I would also like to take this opportunity to say that I agree with and support the testimony of April Snell from the Oregon Water Resources Congress. I don't often get the opportunity to do that, and I wanted to take advantage of that. Thank you very much.
Historic occasion. Thank you very much.
Would he like a video of this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties, and I'm in a slightly unusual position, too, because I'm about to say in a little bit different words what Jim just said, which is unusual for us at the Association of Counties. First of all, though, Mr. Chair, I want to say that your approach, of course, is the one we prefer. If you can get agreement among the maximum number of stakeholders, that's the thing that holds and is understood, and we appreciate that. And that's one of our chief roles at the county level is convening groups like that and trying to reach agreement. But for our 2 cents worth, we support the movement to a 50-50 split because a budget that's so dependent on general fund money is a volatile budget, and we need a budget that is solid and something we can predict. Counties and the state need data on water availability. Counties need that desperately to make appropriate land use decisions. To do that, we need an adequately staffed water resources department. Counties are also looking forward to convening place-based local planning efforts under the water resources strategy. And to do that, we need a fully functioning water resources department to provide the expertise and the support. So for that purpose, we don't foresee that the general fund, with the pressures you have to education, from education and health care, is going to provide any more percentage of support to the natural resources agencies. That's very concerning. If they're functioning, then the natural resources is providing added value and added oomph to the economy, and that's what we're looking for. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. Many of our members are municipal water suppliers, and we are here in support of House Bill 2259. The transaction department, of course, is one of the key elements to supporting job growth and the economy in this state. Obviously, water is a primary driver in the economy of our state. One of the largest water users in our state happens to be Intel. And we know that water is a key element to ensuring that our economy moves forward. If this bill is not passed, we are concerned that one quarter of the transaction staff will be lost in this department. And we want to recognize that increasing fees is never pleasant. It's not pleasant for anybody. And I want to let the cattlemen know, as well as the dairy farmer folks, this isn't easy stuff. And I recognize that they're having difficult times. I'll commit to getting a cheeseburger this afternoon, cover both of them. But this is a real critical issue for us. Our association is committed to the 50-50 cost recovery. Much of this work by the transaction department is generated by customers, and we feel that recovering half that cost is fair. The question before you with this bill really comes down to whether we are going to have higher fees and slower transactions coming out the door, or lower fees and delays and further backlogs. And our association believes that the increase in fees is warranted and necessary to keep moving forward. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very, very much, gentlemen. Recognize Vice Chair Esquire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the 50-50 fee to general fund, I have some problems with that. And I'll tell you why. On lean years, we come in and we say, well, we're down in revenue, so we've got to raise fees. And then when we get plush, we're offset again. You know, our fees aren't keeping up with the general fund. You can get into a vicious circle here, and the only loser is the end user. I want you to keep that in mind, because I don't believe in quotas.
Representative Krieger.
Just, I don't know what the figures are right now, but we were down to 1 or 1.5% of general fund supporting all natural resource agencies combined. Adjacent states are 3 to 5%.
That's right.
We aren't investing in the natural resource agencies that the general public, that aren't the businesses in ag or mining, they have a benefit also, and there should be a great support of general fund, and other states are recognizing it and doing it. We're not.
Thank you very much, Representative Krieger. Yes, Vice Chair Esquire.
I was wondering if the department could bring us in their last five bienniums, 10 years, of their total revenue into that department. We talk about cuts, but I'm curious on whether we really did have any substantial cuts, and if so, how did it go in a maintain in a 10-year period with a graph? We could get that. All funds, not just general funds, but all funds.
Anything additional? Yes, Representative Reardon, please.
I think if we're going to ask for information from the department, and we're going to ask it, and I love graphs, by the way, so if we look at revenue, FTE, number of transactions, maybe there's other things I'm not thinking of, but to try to get a complete picture. Maybe it's the average duration of time spent to fulfill a transaction. You know, some things like that. But I really find it hard as a new person here to take what appears to be a lot of history, a lot of somewhat anecdotal information sometimes, and make a good decision. And I'm trying to do that. I want to make a good balance. And so let's paint a picture. Let's use some data. And what has actually happened over the last 10 years, 20, I don't care how we graph it out, but let's look at history. And then I want to remember that we're always here to protect that water and make sure that we're using it wisely as we go ahead, because if we don't do that, then we're all doomed.
Thank you very, very much, Representative Reardon. You're getting close to volunteering here, so I'm going to take note of that. Anyone else? I'm not seeing anything. Gentlemen, thank you. Truly, thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. Let's see here. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify on House Bill 2259 here today? All right. Come on forward, sir.
Couldn't stand it.
Welcome to our committee.
Chairman, Vice Chairman, members of the committee. My name's Robert Stumbo. I'm from Grants Pass, Oregon. I drove up here today to testify. Kind of lost my way there for a minute. The increased fees on this bill, I think we all need to remember that less government is better government. Part of the reason we're being drugged down here is because of all these increasing fees on everything. My main concern, of course, is I run a small mining supply business in Grants Pass, and these new fees on mining, on the permits for the water, are not appropriate in any way. As Tom said, the water grant of 1899 grants us the rights to the water for mining or any beneficial use, and it even states that it's a public necessity. Under Fletcher versus Peck, which was a Supreme Court decision in about 1790s, the Supreme Court addressed the term grant. It was over land grants, but they addressed the term of a grant. They came to the conclusion that a grant is a contract, and once it's signed, sealed, and done, that's it. They said a grant, in other words, it's a complete extinguishment of the rights of the grantor. In other words, when you grant something to someone, you cannot come back later and say, I changed my mind. We want to do this different. They granted us the rights to the water for mining. The grant covers other things, but that isn't my main concern here today. So I would really like to see this committee look at this seriously, and I would like to be involved in this discussion with the Water Resources Department to see if we can resolve this issue, because even the federal law, and I know most people don't like to hear about it, but the congressional grant of 1866 and 1872, which granted us the rights to the water, it was an act of Congress. And actually the legislature just echoed in, the Oregon legislature echoed that grant in giving us the rights to the water. So I would love to have you people look at that closely when you make your decision on this bill. Thank you very much.
Well, Mr. Stumbo, anybody who's driven all the way to Grants Pass, from Grants Pass, rather, to be with us here today, you're more than welcome to be with that group. Appreciate your comments. Appreciate your participation in the process here very much. And you know, you may have been lost, but you've been to our committee, and now you're found, sir.
Yes, sir. Sounds like a preacher.
Thank you very much. You appreciate your testimony. Last and final call. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2259. And committee members, I'm going to open a work session, not to work the bill, but for the purposes of discussion on this bill. I need a little help here. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2259. And Representative Krieger, I think you have some ideas. I'm looking for a place to go here.
Well, I don't know if we need to try to do it here, but I'm kind of looking at the existing fee structure that we've gotten now, mm-hmm. instead of having to go back to 2003, start at the 2009 level, mm-hmm. then have a discussion. What do we really need to go from there based on workload that they've got in front of them? We need to have a little more information about that.
All right. Very good. Representative Thompson, please.
Yeah, one of the problems we've gotten ourselves into here and other places in government is everybody or a lot of people like user fees because it puts the weight on those people who actually use the services instead of spreading it across government. And that's okay when the fee is $10. But it becomes really onerous when we take this too far and suddenly some poor guy out in the sticks somewhere that wants to do something gets hit with $800 to do anything or multiple fees to do a project. And these things add up to where they're crippling. And I think we need a balance between what we pay for as part of general government obligation and what we pay for as part of user fees. Because, I mean, we can extend this to the absurd, and we have lots and lots of departments. We can just charge everything in the department off to the people who use it. But that's not the role of government. We should be looking at a way to spread these fees across a larger base so it's not crippling to the individuals who need those services, because sooner or later, we all need them. And it seems to be the problem here is the fees are just getting out of control to the guy who's writing the check. Now, a lot of these fees mean nothing to me. I'm not a dairy farmer, so I'm not going to have to pay that fee at all. But I'm sympathetic to dairy farmers who are having to pay that fee, and it is crippling.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. I think you expressed the concerns and sympathies of many members on our committee. Any other members? Oh, I'm sorry, Vice Chair Esquivel.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think that we need to come to grips with this. I would make a suggestion for whomever is on the work group that you appoint or Representative Reardon volunteered for, that maybe you look at the existing fees that we are currently doing, removing the sunset and attaching that to a COLA might be an alternative as well. But the one thing that I, like I expressed before, I don't like quotas on percentage per the general fund versus the fees, because this state fees you to death. That's exactly a fact. We just fee people crazy. And I find it very difficult, and this is just my nature from being in Southern Oregon, is we pay for government and then we pay to use it. And I find that a little disturbing, because I'm sure we don't have people sitting in the back room waiting for you to walk in or write a check for a permit so they can go to work. Those people are working. So I do have some problems swallowing fees, especially when they get as high, like Representative Thompson said, your feed here, your feed there, your feed there. Pretty soon you're in the thousands and thousands of dollars. I thought Bill Cluding made a great example of how the system has failed. And I think that's a failure. So we took $33,000 from some people to give them a note. And I don't think that's appropriate. But, you know, there may be other things to the story, which is fine. But I would like to, whomever is on that committee, I would like to consider keeping those fees where they're at and then maybe getting into a COLA so we don't have to do this every 4, 5, 6 years.
Very good. Representative Reardon.
And I would be interested in working on a committee, but before you select me.
Before you volunteer.
Before you.
It's getting closer all the time here, Representative Reardon.
Oh, maybe not. Maybe not. I think we are at a great discussion between, you know, what is fees versus general fund. Mm-hmm. Where does the money come from for the general fund? It comes from higher taxes. And I would just take a crazy guess here that nobody, or few on this panel or out in the audience, wants to raise taxes to beef up the general fund. So, I mean, it really is tough. And I totally understand the positions of the dairy farmers and the cattlemen and, you know, any other small business owner. We want to be growing those businesses. We don't want to bury them under fees or under anything that's unnecessary. So how do we balance that out? So if you, I am finishing up a work group for another committee. I would be interested in working on this either as a lead position or supporter, you know, member of it. But I will be seeking some kind of balance. I totally value what the Water Resource Department does, but also understand that very tricky balancing act that we have to face. So,
well, thank you, Representative Reardon, and that's exactly the outcome that we're looking for, and that's why I'm going to ask you to be one of the two people, along with Representative Thompson,
Tim, you
since he's volunteering, to meet with the department and meet with the concerned water user groups to help us find a pathway through this. Just doing nothing is not sufficient, and there are enough of us on this committee that have concerns with the bill that we can't get there right now. So you folks are going to have to find that pathway. Representative Clem, please.
Mr. Chair, the other person that might be interested, you might think about, is Representative Bentz.
Because very good.
He's probably the only one of us that actually sat on their oversight board and knows the agency quite well.
A wonderful suggestion. Thank you. Very good suggestion. And I also want the two of you to feel free to call upon any one of us, particularly Representative Krieger, who's got some knowledge on this, and any one of us that you need and outside resources, please let us know. And if we're done in time, maybe some folks want to meet with you after this hearing. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2259. Committee members, obviously we had to work through this. We're short on time, but this was a good discussion, and I think it was a necessary discussion. And those of you in the audience who I'm going to have to short today, my apologies, but we needed this, and this was a good discussion. So please understand. Representative Unger, I understand you have some folks that you've brought in on a bill today. I'm going to briefly open a hearing on House Bill 2992 to accommodate some folks that are here. I'm going to try, if any of you have come a long distance, to accommodate your needs as well, but I'm not going to get through the whole agenda today. It's just, I apologize. With that, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2992, and Representative Unger, would you call whoever have invited?
It's Matt Unger and Laura Conroy are the two that should be on there.
Unger and Unger?
Chair Witt, there is there are extra
Come
Ungers
on
in the room today.
It almost sounds like a Wisconsin sausage factory. Anyways.
We do actually make very good sausage.
Very good.
And if you would like me to introduce this bill really quickly for the committee, this is a...
Please do.
Chair Witt, this is a bill that I've been working on for a little bit. This House bill, it's actually a very simple bill. Its goal is to make sure that if Congress isn't able to act to pass the federal farm bill, that we can still continue some programs that allow people who are served by WIC and who are served by the Farm Direct Nutrition Program to continue to use farmers markets as a way to get some more nutritional food. And so I invited some of the people, my uncle included, who work with the farmer market community to talk a little bit about how this bill would help them.
Well, and Representative Unger, again, my apologies to you, your witnesses, and everyone else who's come to for this hearing. It might be bifurcated. I might have to have two sessions on it, but we are so glad to have you here today. Welcome to our committee, and please proceed.
Go ahead.
Chair Witt and members of the committee, good morning. And thank you so much for giving us the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Laura Conroy, and I'm the market manager for the Hillsborough Farmers Markets. We operate four markets in the greater Hillsborough area. Our oldest market is in historic downtown and has been operating for over 31 years. One of our goals is to ensure that everyone, regardless of their income, It has access to fresh, locally grown produce. And the WIC funding is one way that all of our community can access fresh, local produce. We have about 60 different farmers that sell products at our markets, and we have 80 bakers, butchers, jam, and jelly makers. These small business owners pay taxes, create jobs, and make our community a rich place to live. And we welcome over 15,000 customers at our markets, including WIC recipients. The benefit of WIC programs is not only helping people afford locally produced food, but also to educate them that local food options exist. A farmer's market is sort of a family dining room table. This is where people come together to talk about their work, what they're going to do that day, how school went. It's a gathering place, and it's important that not only WIC recipients and low-income seniors have an opportunity to be at the gathering place, but also all of our other community members. The WIC funding makes sure, or this funding would make sure, that our tax dollars help these low-income people and seniors access fresh food. Without these programs, low-income people and seniors would not have information or the funds to be able to join us at the markets. It's very possible for low-income people and seniors to get to the market and afford fresh produce if they have this type of program. And that concludes my comments.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
Good morning.
I'm Matt Unger, and with my wife, we do 16 farmers markets in the Portland area, west side. And we take the WIC and the senior coupons, and last year it was about 3% of our sales, which doesn't sound like a whole lot, but once you get the people down there, I think you might get a customer for life then. And nothing better than kids getting hooked on berries, fresh berries or produce.
We agree.
And so I think it helps the local growers do the direct marketing, and then I think it really helps, get people hooked on going to farmers markets or farm stands and get them. That's all I.
Very, very good. Thank you so much for your testimony. Committee members, questions or comments?
Sure. One question. Laura, if people don't buy their food from farmers markets and using these WIC programs, do you know where they usually get their food from or where the food that they buy usually comes from? Is it usually local, or is it more from national? Do they have to buy food from big national supermarkets, or
yes, yeah? So yes, so they would go to a supermarket chain. Some of the chains will bring food in that's further away because it can be produced and on a mass scale from farther away without mentioning states that may be doing that. The problem with that is that every time you bring food from a distance, it loses nutrient density. So for every mile, the nutrient density goes down. So they're buying cheap food that has very low nutrient density. And these people have very little money as it is. So buying local gives them literally a bigger bang for their buck because their produce is coming from maybe 5 miles away. And without I don't know, Representative Unger. I'm realizing that there was one more point that I should have made.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Any additional questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Witt, thank you very much. I'm delighted to have you here today. I think this is a great program, and I'm very interested in seeing it be successful. I come from a rural community, and we have a modest farmers market in our area, in our small communities on the coast. And I think one of the questions I would be interested in some information on is in marketing to WIC recipients and seniors, it seems, is there a plan in place for educating them as to the benefits and the possibilities and the fact that they can use these certificates, coupons, whatever you want, are called, in our farmers markets, not only in the metro area, but in our rural communities?
Yes, and I will answer that from my market's perspective. There's actually someone here in the audience that might be able to answer that a little bit better. I don't know if that person's going to testify today or not, but I just wanted to let you know that. And I don't know what your protocol
is
here.
For, doing,
I keep looking behind
that's
me to see if you're going to come help me. But
Chair, we call that a lifeline. You can throw that. You're welcome to throw that if you like, I think.
Absolutely. Please come.
Agreed.
Please feel free to.
Okay. My colleague is Maria Menor, but she's pointing to this other lady. Thank you so much. So for my farmer's market.
I think you should have called her.
Are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Chairwitt.
Good morning and welcome to our committee.
Thank you. My intent is not to put anyone on the spot, but I can see marketing from the farmer's market perspective, but how do you do this from an agency perspective to your clients?
Thank you.
There you go.
Chairwitt, Vice Chair McCune. My name is Sue Woodbury. I'm the program manager for the WIC program for nutrition and health screening for women, infants, and children. We're part of the public health division of the health authority, and we operate both the senior and the WIC Farm Direct programs. Both of those programs involve education as well as the coupons to go out and purchase fresh fruits, vegetables, and culinary herbs at farmers markets. We do offer the benefit across the state. So they're on the coast, wherever there are farmers markets, and there are farmers who have gone through the process of applying to the Oregon Department of Ag. Those vouchers can be used.
Please.
So then the individual producer would have to be licensed or approved through your program, and then the recipient of the coupon can go to that person directly at that farmer's market. So not necessarily everybody at the market would be able to participate.
Chair Witt, representatives, that's correct. And all farmers are eligible to apply, so it's a choice that a farmer would make.
Follow-up, sir?
Yes.
And then how are the farmers notified that they have the potential to participate?
The farmers market managers, in partnership with this amazing agency, train them, or the agency will train them, so and we let them know. And many farmers markets, ours included, require participation.
Great. So that's very, very helpful. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. Additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Thank you so much for being here. And I know that you're out busy making sure that Oregon's got a vibrant economy, and probably not available necessarily when we're holding public hearings. But I want each and every one of you to feel free to come back when we reopen the hearing on this bill. So thank you ever so much. And my apologies.
Thank you.
Take care. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2992. Committee members, we've got a number of our committee who are backed up against 10 a.m. I'm going to get you out of here, but I would like to do the work sessions on the bills that we have scheduled for today. We've got two of them that are referrals. Hopefully those should go quickly. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2390. Beth, can you remind us what that bill is about?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is a -4 amendment in your packet for House Bill 2390. This is the bill that would repeal the sunset on the provisions that specify how ODF&W appoints persons to act as agents for the using one or more dogs to hunt or pursue black bear or cougar. The -4 would additionally require the Fish and Wildlife Commission to report every 2 years to the governor and legislature on their appointment of agents, and specifies some of what the report must include. There is no revenue impact, a minimal fiscal impact, and no subsequent referral.
Thank you very much. Committee members, do folks have enough information? It's a relatively short amendment, and folks comfortable moving forward? All right, with that, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen, please.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt the -4 amendment dated March 13th, 2013.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the -4 amendment dated March 13th, 2013 to House Bill 2390. Discussion on her motion. Seeing none, hearing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, hearing none, so ordered. Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2390 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2390 as amended to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussions on her motion? I'm not seeing any. Maria, would you please call the roll?
Representative
Whitford.
Aye.
Representative Munger.
Aye.
Representative
Clem. Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Reardon.
Aye.
Vice Chair McEwen.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Esposito.
Aye.
Chair Witt.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, the motion passes. And just by a clarification, there was no subsequent referral.
Gotcha.
Okay, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 20. Whoops, I need a carrier.
I can do it.
Okay.
I could volunteer Representative Krieger.
No, Vice Chair Esquivel, okay. Thank you very much. Closing the work session on House Bill 2390, opening a work session on 2039. Beth?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 2039 is the bill that makes modifications to the statute that regulates outfitters and guides. There is a Dash 2 amendment in your packet as well as a Dash 2 fiscal statement. The Dash 2 amendment would make a number of changes to the bill, including adding the definition of charter guide in place of ocean guide. It revises some of the affidavit requirements to address felony or misdemeanor convictions related to the provision of services regulated under the chapter. Changes the requirement for USGS Coast Guard, it shouldn't be GS, sorry about that, U.S. Coast Guard operator license by 2018 to a requirement that the outfitter and guide first pass a written test adopted by the board by rule, participate in drug and alcohol programs defined by the board, and complete a physical exam every 5 years as required by the board by rule. It exempts persons operating a motorboat on waters determined to be navigable and in possession of an operator license.
Thank you very much. And Beth, as I recall, we had some folks that were working on that issue.
I believe the department, the Marine Board, worked with some of the folks.
Okay, very good. Committee members, are we okay on this one? Have folks had enough time to review this? Thank you very much. I recognize Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 8, 2013.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated March 8, 2013 to House Bill 2039. Discussion on her motion. Seeing none, hearing none. Is there any objection? Seeing none, hearing none. So ordered. Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 2039 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means prior to reference, or by prior reference, sorry.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 2039 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion on that motion. Is there any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Thank you very much. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2039 and open a work session on House Bill 3201. Beth?
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 3201 is a bill you heard earlier this week that deals with liability for forest fires. There is a Dash 3 amendment in front of you which combined the amendments that were discussed by OFIC and the Department of Forestry. So it's the combined Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendment. There is no revenue impact, no fiscal impact. There is a subsequent referral on this bill to the Judiciary Committee.
To Judiciary. All right. Committee members, have we had enough time to review this one? It looks like the concerned parties are all in agreement. All right, with that, I'm going to recognize Vice Chair McEwen again.
Chair Witt, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated March 11th, 2013.
Thank you. Vice Chair McEwen moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated March 11th, 2013 to House Bill 3201. Discussion on our motion. Seeing none. Is there any objection to the adoption of the amendment? Seeing none, so ordered. Vice Chair McEwen.
Chair Witt, I move House Bill 3201 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Judiciary Committee by prior reference.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair McEwen moves House Bill 3201 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Judiciary Committee by prior reference. Discussion on her motion. Seeing none, is there any objection? So ordered. Thank you very much. Good of the order. We're going to get folks out of here before 10.
Do you want to carry 2992 over? You need to announce it.
Oh, yes,
I
do.
If you want to carry this one.
I'm going to carry over House Bill 2992. And do we need a date specific on that?
Yeah, to Tuesday. Do it on Tuesday.
Yes, to Tuesday, yeah. Please.
The
19th. And
looks like a good
bill. Let's see, we were going to finish the hearing on... That's it. All right, anything else for the good of the order? Seeing none, we stand adjourned. Thank you very much, committee members.